Personality Plus by Edna Ferber, Chapter 1. Making Good with Mother. When men began to build cities vertically instead of horizontally, there passed from our highways a picturesque figure, and from our language an expressive figure of speech. That oily-tongued, persuasive, soft-stepping stranger in the rusty Prince Albert and the black string tie, who had been wont to haunt our back steps and front offices with his carefully wrapped bundle, retreated in bewildered defeat before the clanging blows of steel on steel that meant the erection of the first 20-story skyscraper. As Slick, we used to say, as a lightning rod agent. Of what use his wares on a building whose tower was robed in clouds, and which used the chain lightning for a necklace? The Fourth Avenue antique dealer had another curio to add to his collection of andirons, knockers, snuff-boxes, and warming pans. But even as this quaint figure vanished, there sprang up a new and glittering one to take his place. He stood, framed in the great plate-glass window of the very building which had brought about the defeat of his predecessor. A miracle of close shaving his face was, and a marvel of immaculateness his linen. Dapper he was, and dressy, albeit inclined to glittering effects and a certain plethory at the back of the neck. Back of him stood shining shapes that reflected his glory in enamel and brass and glass. His language was floral but choice. His talk was of gearings and bearings and cylinders and magnetos. His method differed from that of him who went before, as the method of a skilled aeronaut differs from that of the man who goes over Niagara in a barrel. And as he multiplied and spread over the land, we coined a new figure of speech. Smooth, we chuckled, as smooth as an automobile salesman. But even as we listened, fascinated by his fluent verbiage, there stood within us a certain resentment. Familiarity with his glittering wares bred a contempt of them, so that he fell to speaking of them as necessities instead of luxuries. He juggled figures and thought nothing of four of them in a row. We looked at our $5,000 salary, so strangely shrunken and thin now, and even as we looked, we saw that the method of the unctuous, anxious stranger had become antiquated in its turn. Then from his ashes emerged a new being. Neither urger nor spellbinder he. The 20th century was stamped across his brow, and on his lips were ever the word service. Silent, courteous, watchful, alert, he listened while you talked. His method, in turn, made that of the silk-lined salesman sound like the hoarse hoots of the ballyhoo man at a country fair. Blithely he accepted $500,000 and gave in return a promise. And when we would search our soul for a synonym to express all that was low-voiced and suave and judicious and patient and sure, we began to say, as alert as an advertising expert. Jock McChesney, looking as fresh and clear-eyed as only 21 and a cold shower can make one look, stood in the doorway of his mother's bedroom. His toilet had halted abruptly at the bathrobe stage. One of those bulky garments swathed his slim figure, while over his left arm hung a gray tweed Norfolk coat. From his right hand dangled a pair of trousers, in pattern a modish black and white. Jock eyed the gray garment on his arm with moody eyes. "Well, I'd like to know what's the matter with it," he demanded, a trifle irritably. Emma McChesney, in the act of surveying her back hair in the mirror, paused, hand-glass poised halfway, to regard her son. "All right," she answered cheerfully, "I'll tell you. It's too young." "Young?" He held it at arm's length and stared at it. "What do you mean, young?" Emma McChesney came forward, wrapping the folds of her kimono about her. She took the disputed garment in one hand and held it aloft. "I know that you look like a man on a magazine cover in it, but Norfolk suits spell tennis and seashore and elegant leisure."